Hey guys, join in on the conversation. Don't forget to like and subscribe, leave us a comment, let us know what you think and what you want to hear us talk about. Warning, in an attempt to identify and discuss our issues openly, we at the Other Side of Hell podcast may discuss drug and alcohol abuse in detail. Anyone suffering with addiction can find this trigger.
Please note, we are not counselors, therapists, or medical professionals. Do not speak on behalf of any 12-step groups or treatment facilities. We are just three guys who have been through hell and have come out the other side.
Our hope is to share our experience with others who may have found themselves in similar situations so that you know you are not alone, there is hope, and there are people who understand how you feel. Enjoy.
What's up, everybody? I'm Nate.
I'm Willie.
And I'm Cameron.
Welcome to the Other Side of Hell podcast. Okay, how are we doing, guys?
I feel good this morning.
You feel good?
Yeah, nice
doing
and healthy.
Well?
Yeah.
All right, good. Okay, I'm glad. Yeah, I feel glad healthy. To hear that. Great. Healthy. Cameron, how are you doing?
I'm okay.
You're okay.
I feel mostly good.
It's good to be back.
I do. You know, it's been a weird week for me.
Has it?
Yeah, I feel like I just did some different things with my routine this week. And I think it might be messing with me a little bit.
Okay.
And I didn't go to the gym yesterday for the first time in a long time.
Like two and a half months.
That kind of threw you off a little bit,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think, you know, trying not to get too much in my head about it. Like,
yeah,
thinking that I'm getting off track. So,
isn't that funny how we, like, we beat ourselves up for not doing good enough. We beat ourselves up for doing too good. We back it off a bit, mm-hmm. And then the mind, the mental masturbation of it all.
Dude, how many people probably like go to the gym for 3 months and then miss a day and are like probably completely justified in missing a day? Yeah, I've been going every day for 3 months. Like, it's okay if I don't go a day. But it's like, if I don't go a day, I'm like, I'm a piece of shit. Like, why didn't I go? Like, I'm lazy. I'm just going to get right back into that old routine.
Why didn't you go?
I sort of had a couple of things happen in the morning that prevented me from going right when I woke up. And so it was like, oh, I'll do it later. I'll go later. And then later came and it didn't happen.
But why? Like, was it because stuff, important things got in the way? Or did you think about doing it and then justify like, you know, I've been doing good for the last 2 months. I'm going to go ahead and not.
Yeah, I would say like come like 7 p.m. I was like, I'm okay not going today. Mm-hmm. Like there was legitimate stuff that happened up until that point.
Mm-hmm.
But then like come 7 p.m. it was like, I'm probably okay not going, you know. And there were some behaviors like with food this week that were not great. Like, I'm still like sugar-free. I'm still like, you know, eating within my window for the most part, but that's one of those things. It's like there was one day where I ate outside that window and during intermittent fasting. And so, like, I generally eat between 2 p.m. and 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. And there was one day, like, I had like a protein bar like early in the morning and just some behaviors with food that were a little familiar and reminiscent of, you know, that compulsive overeating.
Like kickstarting the obsession again.
Exactly. Kinda,
yeah.
So you're able to identify those behaviors pretty quick. Like, that's got to be good.
To be able to catch
yourself early, you know, instead of letting it build up. And
yeah, I mean, it looks a lot different than it did.
Yeah. And you look great.
Thanks,
I got to say, like, I mean, the weight loss is more than obvious now.
Thanks. Like, I got a haircut, I feel like.
Yeah,
that
maybe that's it, too. I don't know.
Great hair.
Great head
of hair.
Something
about having so
hair,
much hair that it makes know? It so I have to do, like, have to Jeez. Cut it constantly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sucks, doesn't it? I bet it sucks.
Huh. I sent you guys that text.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was funny.
Maybe you should post that.
I sent these guys a text of just me and my hair, and you guys can see Jordan in the background. Jordan in the background right now.
What? I didn't hair you.
Yeah. Jordan's flinging his hair around.
Could you say that again? I couldn't quite hair you.
Yeah, I sent these guys a text of my crazy morning hair, and I was like, see, guys, like, having all this hair, it's rough.
But to be fair, he did have his shirt on, so we didn't get to see the full mess of hair that he had. So.
Yeah, you don't want to see that. That's bear, on Instagram, too, though, really.
The bear hair. Yeah, it is. There's some progression pictures on your Instagram
page. Who would have thought, man?
Cameron eats less food.
Like, it's crazy to think that I'm posting pictures of the negative space that is my body right now on Instagram for the world to see.
Right. You know? Very inspiring.
It is.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you. I'm really proud of you. Yeah.
Other than that, Nate, I feel like it's been a good week, productive. Good. Like, you were there for some of it.
Yeah,
and
I was. Yeah, we got a lot done for the podcast Thursday.
So. Yeah, so, you know, I'm usually better than I think I am.
That would be
my response.
I would agree with that. I think a lot of people could agree. I think we could say that about a lot of people. I don't know if everybody can agree with that, but, you're probably doing better than you think you are.
Right. Yeah. But how are you, buddy?
Yeah. I'm good. I'm doing well. I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm hosting, so I'm going to try something a little different right now.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So right off the bat, what are you grateful for?
What am I grateful for? I'm grateful for... Oh.
Come on.
The most thing I'm grateful for, I'm grateful for Avery.
Right on. Cameron, what are you grateful for?
Avery?
Easy. Oh, wow.
Actually, I might just go with that. I am grateful for Avery. She shared her story, and she's always, like, commenting on my Instagram, and, like, she's pretty great.
She comments on my Instagram too, and they're really nice comments. You're lucky. Yeah. You're a lucky guy. Yeah. I would be grateful for that.
Am I?
Yeah.
How about I say this?
Well, I don't know. I don't live with her. So
let me go back a little bit and say that I'm just grateful for the community that I have.
Right on. There you
sure.
go. There you go.
The village. The village that I have found myself in.
Okay.
Sure.
You know.
All right.
I like that.
Yeah. I am grateful for my friendships that I have right now.
Yeah, you got a little teary-eyed this morning.
I did. I just woke up, I got the opportunity to film a war story last night at our friend Scott's house, and he showed me something, a video that a friend sent to him that was really touching, and then I just, you know, this podcast is just, you guys... I just love being around you guys and what you guys do for me as far as building me up and keeping me going and driven. I couldn't ask for anything more. You know, I'm really lucky to have this, you know, the friendships I do right now.
I can agree with that.
And yeah, it was. And yeah, I am an emotional guy, so I did kind of, I'm a sensitive person.
And it's funny that you say the word lucky, because I don't agree with that. You know,
you say that a lot.
We've talked about that when you've mentioned, like, coming over to my house and seeing the structure of my family and the nature of my relationships. And you're like, gosh, you're such a lucky guy. And there might be a little bit, you might consider that a little bit lucky in the fact that I have a partner on board with wanting a better life for herself. But when I live my life with intention, right? Mm-hmm. Everything that I have in my life, I built on purpose. I didn't like become happy on accident.
Right.
Like, I wasn't happy. And I thought, surely I could be happy. I look at people that seem to be happy and I kind of like would want that. What do they do? Right.
Yeah.
And there's work involved. Right. So you being lucky in this community, you found yourself in a position where you were just devastated in life. You started the process of changing yourself. You had to make some really tough decisions.
I did.
Right? Like leaving an 18-year marriage, quitting your job. Like, all that stuff is on purpose. You didn't do those things on accident. And now you put effort into the relationships that you have. And what comes out of that is this blossoming, beautiful thing that you're grateful for, that you have some other people on board with it. You know, we got Jordan, Cameron, myself.
You're right about that. You're right. But I don't know. I just, making hard decisions. I've made some hard decisions, some hard changes in my life, but I don't know. I just this morning it was like, you know, I kind of had some loneliness feelings this week. You know, feelings of loneliness.
You did.
Yeah, I did. I did.
You did have some loneliness.
And I was doing my gratitude list last night, and you guys, I wrote you guys down, and just, you know, how, but I just, I don't know. You guys came in my life at a good time, and I appreciate that. I really do. I'm grateful for that.
Thanks, man.
And thanks for the support and the motivation that I got this week. I kind of got in a little bit of a rut. Both of you guys were there to kind of pick me up and keep me moving in the right direction.
You're a gazelle.
I'm a gazelle.
You're a gazelle. I just want to say one thing.
Please, yes, let's hear it.
Maybe let's not get too caught up on words. You don't have to say lucky. I get your opposement to the word luck. It implies that you didn't earn it and that it was
you make your own.
Yeah, like I'd say that you're very fortunate.
There we go. Okay.
Fortunate.
Thank you.
And I too am fortunate. And one thing that Willie says a lot that I like to remind myself of, you know, when I think about how fortunate I am, is that could have been so different.
Could have been different.
Could have been way different.
Yeah.
And learning these stories that we have a great story today, you know.
We do.
You know, Lindsay was kind enough to give us her story, and like for her it could have been so different. You know?
You're right about that. Yes. So yeah.
Great.
Yeah. So
we're all doing well.
I'm well.
I am well.
Nobody feels sick. No colds. No
funny.
No runny noses. No coronavirus.
Listen, I wouldn't tell you guys if I was.
Yeah, probably.
This podcast means too much to me. I would come here sick.
Would you?
I'll yeah.
Hacking and coughing all over us.
Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't really care about you guys. I'm selfish.
Wow.
In case you hadn't figured it out.
I have a baby. I have three.
You do have three.
Oh,
babies,
right.
Don't come at me sick.
Okay.
Yeah, wow.
But, I mean, let's talk about it a little bit. You know? Like, take us in there. Like, in the reason that we're talking about it.
Yeah, so we are, that's our topic.
What?
What's our topic?
Fear. We're going to talk about fear.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the coronavirus.
But we are going to talk.
We're all affected by it right now.
We're all affected by the coronavirus. Yeah. Like,
some way, shape, or form.
I went to the grocery store yesterday. I couldn't believe the chaos there.
Yeah. Well Cameron had kind of a similar. So did Jordan. Like, Jordan about got beat up for his cart here. Here in town.
I like that Jordan was the bigger person in that scenario.
He's yeah,
like,
I'm proud of you.
Take
for that.
The cart. It's here. Fine. Yeah. Dude, I had a lady when I was at Winco. Like, I was at the grocery store and I walked in, and this lady was completely blown away that the shelves were empty. She looked at me and she goes, "Oh my God." And I said, "It gets worse," because I had been there the night before. And then as we like moved even deeper into the store, she looked at me and she goes, "Do you know where I can get some TP around town?" And it was like totally reminiscent of
back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day. It's like, dude,
you got any TP?
You got any of that TP on you, bro?
You look like Cameron looks like a guy that would have some
stockpile.
I don't look
TP.
Like an undercover cop. I'd be like, did you just ask me for TP? Are you? You're soliciting an officer at the moment, ma'am. Maybe you should take that TP comment back.
That'd be pretty funny if you did that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in all seriousness, we are, when the president talks about it. And
well, it's a serious problem for our nation right now. You know, I don't know if I really don't know how to feel about it. On one hand, I feel like people are just overreacting, that this is just going to, in a, you know, I know it's going to last.
Another one of those things.
Yeah. You know, it'll blow over. You know, we'll take care of it. It's not the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the other hand, you know, anything that when
like
the
what if?
Yeah, what if? And, I mean, we have government officials coming out, canceling schools. I mean, they're canceling events.
Meetings are getting shut down.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we do need to be taking it serious, of course. you know, but
we've all seen the zombie shows, right?
Right, right. But on the other hand, like, are we overreacting? Or, you know, I just don't know how to feel about it, really.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know as far as like a level of fear. I'm not exactly sure where to place it.
Well, it's funny, you know, I say that it's funny, but it's not funny. You know, for the first time, I was watching the pandemonium that humans get into in states of crises. Mm-hmm. You know, there's two things. You know, I've always said that the thing that I love about America,
do what you want.
The thing that I love about America is that we're like two brothers fighting, right? And we're beating the shit out of each other. And then somebody comes in and they're like, hey, you guys knocked that shit off. And then the two brothers beat that person up and then go back to fighting. Like we unite over and over and over again. We watch people come together because we are a resourceful nation. Like mm-hmm. we are a nation of abundance. There is a lot of poverty. There is a lot of problems. But it seems like the backbone of our country is still people. Right. Like yeah. it seems like that. And it always just overwhelms me. And I always feel so proud of the people in this country when I watch a crisis happen and I watch people come together in a way that they wouldn't normally come together under like more peaceful or whatever circumstances. Right. And so this is no different. Right. Like,
yeah.
And like, it seems like the government is working to get information, even though we all have our opinions about the government and the information that we're getting from them. But, you know, Cameron mentioned it earlier, like he's finally washing his hands the way that he probably should have been washing his hands the whole time, you know, and I am too.
No, like,
you know,
I'm taking a little more,
a little more precaution, just like, because science has given us that, right?
I'm just...
Don't look at me.
I don't know why. I just thought...
I'm just saying, like...
You've always washed your hands after you go to the bathroom,
I wash my hands when I piss on them.
That's it?
That's it. And guess how often I'm sick, guys?
Yeah.
Never.
I've never seen you sick.
My immune system rocks. Because I never wash my hands. But yeah, like, I started washing... I'll wash them. Now,
what is the proper way of washing your hands? I
there's videos.
My ex-wife,
why don't you look on Instagram? Because every celebrity is offering their current opinion on how to wash their hands now.
Yeah, I heard, and this is from my ex-wife, but she was really good about that. And you do your ABCs while you're washing your hands, like you.
Let's have it.
20 seconds.
A B C D E F G H I J K L M N O P Q R S T U V W X Y Z, and then you can. You're done.
Yeah, because you're basically, you're supposed to do it for 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's the deal. So, and like if you do your ABCs, it's supposed to last 20 seconds.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's,
but there's also
that's how
like,
what we.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a couple of songs that I saw like a sheet of paper that said songs that have 20 second choruses so you can sing these songs while you're washing your hands.
Oh, okay.
One of them's like The Killers.
Yeah, there's a ton of videos, like Instagram videos,
that's what I mean.
TikTok
like,
videos.
Everybody
how to properly wash your hands.
Opinions on how to wash your hands right now, and it's like, I mean,
did we not know how to wash?
I don't know. I think the biggest thing about it is that people want to feel like they can do something about what's happening, right?
Okay.
And so, people are offering their opinions or trying to stay proactive in helping whatever is happening,
right?
Because in a way, like, we're all sort of just helpless,
right?
So like by offering your opinions, like these celebrities that have come out with like these hand washing videos or whatever, it's like they feel like they're somehow maybe helping to the cause, or you know, instead of being a part of the problem.
Sure.
So
well, I want to be part of the solution.
Right.
So I'm encouraging everybody to wash your hands. Mm-hmm. Say your ABCs while you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
Sing a song.
I would probably wash your hands no matter whether you pee on them or not. wash them. But
and if you meet any of the other side of hell guys, wash your hands after you meet us.
Yeah, please.
It's fair to say.
Especially Cameron.
Yeah.
I was speaking mainly for myself, but yeah.
No, you're a clean guy. You're clean. We're all clean here. And
thanks.
So, yeah. But
yeah. Yeah, the fear, right? That's what we're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned today,
for the first time,
you've locked your doors.
Locking my doors at night.
Yeah.
Just,
that's crazy.
You know, fear makes people do weird stuff.
It really does.
And that little extra precaution may help someone else from making a bad choice by entering my home uninvited.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like,
to get all that stocked up toilet paper? I don't know.
For whatever reason, you know, who knows? You know, I mean, there's, you know, crime and drug addiction, crime and fear, like all that stuff run hand in hand, you know, like,
yeah.
And so, if there's something that I can do to deter somebody from easily coming in, then I'm going to do that.
Oh yeah, I get that. I totally get that.
I've never really lived my life on that basis, because I know if somebody wants in, then they'll get in. Right.
And yeah.
Same thing with like my vehicles and stuff like that. You know, I generally don't lock them regardless of what I have in it, because
really?
If somebody wants in my stuff, like now my stuff's missing and I got a broken window. Right. Like
true. Yeah.
So, but I mean, it's creating awareness, you know, and I think that the topic of fear is really good, because it plays a big part on how I live my life today. It's being able to step through that, you know. When I first started getting sober and I started processing the things that are wrong with me, you know, you guys have heard me share, especially you know, working through the 12 steps of a 12-step program with me, you know, fear, we do a fear inventory.
Yes.
as part of getting to know ourselves, right? Because we, a lot of people go through their lives without ever really taking stock of themselves or taking a look at what causes all these negative emotions in us. And I found that fear creates every bad behavior that I've ever had. Like anytime I've been violent or ran away or lied to somebody or, you know, hurt somebody or stolen anything or any of that stuff was all based out of some type of fear, right? Whether it was fear of rejection or fear of being hurt or fear of being lost or fear of change or whatever that is, you know, every negative behavior that I've ever had, which, you know, when I say behavior, it's like an action thing, right? Every negative action that I've ever had was based out of some sort of fear. You know, fear can be a great motivator too, right? So it's kind of like a double-edged sword, because I live my life to the fullest in the way that I do because of the fear of regretting my life at the end of it, like being conscious, knowing that I'm going to die and like looking back and regretting that I didn't do everything I could to maximize the one life that I have. That's a fear of mine, but it motivates me in a positive way. So, you know, fear is a great topic, and it's a huge part of mankind, right? It's part of our wiring.
Yeah.
You know, so the coronavirus, you know, if it's not that, it seems like there's something else to be afraid of.
Yeah. I remember doing my fear inventory with you when we did the 12, you know, we were working 12 steps, and I remember originally it was just like, I fear snakes, dark places, you know, and
your classic fears.
Yeah. And I remember I think you told me to go back and think harder or something. I can't remember the exact wording, but
do better.
Called do better.
You pussy.
Yeah. And I really did. I took some time and really pondered on it, you know, meditated about it. And I didn't realize how much fear of judgment. I was really fearful of judgment, ridicule. You know, it really, like, fear goes deep in me.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's really...
I feel like it's the root of
everything.
Of every sort of... Like Willie's saying.
Like every lie I've ever told.
It's the root of every bad characteristic I have.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Like every... I like how you said that. Every lie I've ever told, there's some fear in there. You know? Yeah. And we're all... I think we're all... I believe we're all hardwired to have fear. You know? We have a brain that's really just trying to keep us safe. So that fear is inevitable, you know, to me, in my opinion, you know.
What
I don't
do
know
think?
If that makes sense.
What do you think, Cameron?
Well, it,
what do you got?
It's the...
Don't be scared.
Talk up.
You guys.
Come on. Be scared.
Don't be
part
scared.
Of this podcast.
Thanks. guys.
You're really. Let's be honest. You really are this podcast.
Yeah. Well, I am
the best
most
looking one on here.
Part of the show.
Your most important part of the show.
Thanks, Nate. Like you are. Nate, I'm just gonna stop. Make sure nobody talks over me and repeat what you just said because I feel it's very important. Nate just said I'm the best looking one on the show.
He is.
We all have different opinions.
I just want to let everybody sit with that for a minute. Anyways, thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't agree, by the way.
Cameron's like, oh.
it comes back to fight or flight, right? Like, I feel like that's one of the most primitive instincts that I can identify within myself, right? Like,
yeah.
And people talk about it all the time. Like, we hear people, you know, talk about the fight or flight mechanism. And that, you know, like we had that at one time, we had that so that we could either run from the saber-toothed tiger or fight the saber-toothed tiger, right? And it's like now that mechanism has no way of being acted out. So it's like we're in these situations where we have that fight or flight mechanism and we can't exactly flight like we want, you know, like we can't leave or we can't fight like we want. So our bodies don't know what to do with that energy.
It's right. Like,
and so, you know, it oftentimes just creates fear and anxiety that just sort of compounds and builds on itself. Because, like, if I'm in a heated meeting with my boss, I can't punch him and I probably can't walk away either. I think that that has a lot to do with what's happening now. It's just fear, you know. It's just fear.
Yeah. Well, fear. Go ahead.
I always recognize fear as false, right? False evidence. We've heard that false evidence appearing real. Why is it that? Why did that euphemism? Is that what is that called?
Acronym.
Acronym for fear is right. Because I personally have never seen a fear play out the way that I thought it would. See, there's a difference, like what Cameron's talking about, that fight or flight mechanism. The primal wiring in our brain that is in there as part of our evolution to stay alive is danger is real, right?
Right.
Danger is very real. And we've talked about that before. So, you know, coming out of the cave and getting chased by a saber-toothed tiger is very dangerous and may have effects on our lives. Like it might keep us from being alive if we get caught by the tiger. And so, we have that chemical reaction, right? And I know cortisol plays a part of it. Adrenaline plays a part of it. You know, these are natural chemicals in our bodies. But the fear part of it, right? Like we hear a message from the CDC that there's this virus that is affecting the world, right?
Right.
Now there's danger and the fear of danger, right? Because if this thing gets out of hand, then a lot of people's lives very well may be at stake, right? Especially it seems like they're saying that it's older people with poor immune systems and younger kids without, you know, adequate immune systems and things like that. It seems like that's who it's affecting and harming. And so it seems like when there's something like that, that our flight or fight mechanism really kicks in as a species. And people start reacting kind of insanely for a little while, right? And so that's where my fear, not so much of the coronavirus, but the fear of the people in that state will, you know, that makes me want to lock the doors. And so it's really important for us to get a really big grip on what our fears are. And that's what we do with a fear inventory, right? So if I have a huge fear of dying, right? Like if I have that fear, which I don't today, like I recognize it as every bit as natural as birth, right? It's going to be something that I'm going to come up against. I don't get to decide when it is. I can do some things that help me make sure it takes a little bit longer, right?
Right.
Through health and exercise and what I put into my body and those types of things. But eventually it's going to come. But if I have a fear of death and I don't recognize that, then perhaps when something happens globally like this, I'm going to react to that fear subconsciously, right? all of a sudden there's this virus that may kill people. I'm a person. This virus is in the world. What do I need to do to survive? Right. Mm-hmm. And so it like just chain reacts into this negative action, this negative behavior, right? Because I haven't identified what my fears are. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's why it's like super important for us to come up with some type of way to identify our fears, right? So
right.
So that we can recognize them for what they are. So like, Nate, what are some of the ways that you process and identify your fears?
Well, for me, I got to write it down. Like, if I experience fear or I experience an emotion, I got to sit down and write it out. You know, like we did with my step work, everything was written out. And it kind of, you know, I'm a visual person. So, like, if I go somewhere and people don't react to me like I want them to, and, you know, I'm leave sweating and, you know, feeling bad about myself, I got to go home and write it out.
You were mentioning, like, sometimes you'll go to, like, a group setting.
Yeah, yeah.
And walk in and start feeling that fight or flight.
Right off the bat, yeah. Right. Like, everybody's looking at me like there's something wrong, and then I'll start talking, and I'm not received the way I expect to be received, and so I think I'm saying things wrong. I'm not, you know. Mm-hmm. And
I see Cameron over there shaking his head. Well, like some of that, he can identify.
Yeah, but because some of what you're talking about is based on assumptions, right?
Right, yeah. Correct. And I guess that goes back to that fear, false evidence appearing real.
Right.
Because really, are they really looking at me thinking I look weird? Are they look? Am I saying things that are bizarre? No, that's me. But I have to write that out, and I have to process that. You know, I don't think I'm abnormal for having those fears and those anxieties, and I think there's a lot of people who are like that.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
But you know, I have to realize that my whole life I never really felt that comfortable in group settings. You know, and as I write things out, I kind of, you know, these kind of thoughts and realizations will come to me, like, you know, hey, did anybody say anything to you like they didn't want you there? No, nobody said that. Okay, then right. That's probably like what you're feeling is probably just, like you said, assumptions, because, you know, people, you know, my expectations were probably just out of whack, you know, is how I need to look at it. But that's just one way of how I process.
So writing
it out. A lot of times I will call either Willie or I will call Cameron and say, I mean, I did that this week. You know, I called you guys and we talked it out on the phone, you know, uh-huh. And you guys kind of brought me back to reality, kind of let me know what I did wrong and what, you know, things that.
Yeah, wrong's a relative term
though. Relative term, right? Yeah. But I mean, you guys kind of helped me process it and so I could get past that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll go to meetings and you know, my support groups, and I'm very open and honest in my support groups and about my fears and my feelings, and it's nice to be able to go somewhere and be able to talk openly about those things and get their advice and their opinion, because fear really is a big, it's an issue for me, you know?
It's a paralyzer for some people.
It really is. Paralyzing is a perfect word for it. It really is. Like, there have been times when fear has made me isolate and turn to things, you know, out that are unhealthy, you know? So, that's how Cameron, what do you do?
Well, the first thing I do is really try and recognize.
Identify.
Yeah, identify that is what I'm feeling, is fear, you know. So, generally, like, any time that I'm uncomfortable, I have to stop and sort of ask myself, like, why am I uncomfortable? Like, what is happening, what's going on that's making me feel out of sorts? And then once I identify it as fear, it's like, okay, well, what am I really afraid of? And it's something that, you know, I've I hear a lot, not necessarily in this context, but, you know, I'll play that tape through, right? So, like, what am I afraid of? Okay, well, I'm afraid that, you know, people aren't going to like me. Well, okay, so what if people don't like me? Like, how does that affect what I'm doing, you know? And really try and, like, ask myself, if the worst-case scenario in this situation is true, then what, you know? And generally it's like, well, like, it doesn't really matter, like, you know, or it will come to, like, this point where it's like, well, then I guess I would deal with it, wouldn't I? Like, I, you know, I would probably be okay dealing with that if it were the facts as I had it, you know. But generally, it's like the biggest thing for me that causes the most amount of fear, and I think it's probably speaks to what's happening right now, is the unknown, like the not knowing, right? Like, I think a lot of, you know, my fear comes from not knowing one or the, like, if you don't like me, I can deal with that, you know? But when I don't know if you don't like me or if you do like me, then I'm fucking all screwed up, right?
Right.
And, like, I think that, you know, that's a lot of maybe what's happening right now, is that people are afraid because they don't know what to expect in the next 2 weeks, where normally life is fairly predictable. They can go about their day. They know what to expect, you know, out of the next any length of time, you know, given amount of time. Right now, like, nobody really knows what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks. And so I think fear of the unknown is really, like, what is paralyzing so many people.
I think that's a great point. Like, you know, basically, wouldn't that be all there is?
Right.
Fear of the unknown.
Well, I mean, and what's crazy about it to me is that we never know. Like,
exactly.
That's an illusion. I mean. Yeah. Like, it's, you know, like, what's going to happen in the next 2 weeks is completely unknown anyways.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just that loss of control, I think, is what's happening.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, that's one aspect to me dealing with fear, is that, hey, man, like, I don't have any control. Like, mm-hmm. I don't. Like, I just don't have any control. There's very few things that I have control of. And if I can sort of turn my focus towards those things, then I'm usually in a much better place mentally, physically, you know, and with everybody in my circle. I'm much more pleasant to be around, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean,
that's a great point, like, loss of control. Like, I see that in myself, you know, like, I want to be able to predict the future. Like, this, I do this now, this is what's going to happen in a year from now or in a month from now, you know, like, when I really, like you said, I don't have any control over that. I just got to live for today. And that's a big thing for me too. It's just, you know, what can I do today? You know, I can't worry about tomorrow. I can't worry about the future. You know, life will unfold the way it will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just need to be ready to roll with the punches and be ready for today. You know, so I really like how you said that. You know,
I think that the number one thing that a person needs to do, and this is my opinion, you could agree with it or disagree with it, is put at the top of your priority list is discovering and developing a relationship with yourself.
Great point.
Right.
Great point.
I think that all too often, so many of us run through life without having a true relationship with ourselves. You know, I've used the house analogy a bunch of times with beginning, you know, with starting this relationship with yourself. And it's like having this beautiful home and you only stay in one room because you're afraid of leaving it. Right. Like, and so when I first started changing my life, you know, the first thing that was most apparent for me was that the drugs and alcohol were destroying me, right? And so once those were gone, there was still all this disaster that was me, right? And so for the first 2 years of this change, you know, I would literally get panic attacks because I didn't know what I was doing, who I was, where I was going, what was coming next, how I was going to get there. I was still using food and porn and negative self-talk as a way to cope with things. And it wasn't until I started changing my focus from running from something, right? Like I was running from my past. I was running from my fears. I was running from my drug and alcohol abuse. I was trying to get away from all these things. And until I turned my focus and decided that I was going to run towards a relationship with me, right? Because once I know that there's certain things that I cannot do and make my life better, once I know that, right, and I could admit that completely honestly and be completely willing to do whatever is necessary to get a relationship with myself, then the process can begin, right? So the first thing I would say, desire a relationship with you. Find out who you are. What are your fears, right? What have you been carrying with, right? Some people have abuse, like serious abuse in their life as an adult that happened to them as a kid, and they still will live in the fear that that's going to happen again. And that's really an unrealistic fear, right? So when we start the process of identifying our fears, right, the way that I did that, right, was one, like Cameron was saying, like something's not normal, right? I shouldn't be driving down the street from work, from a good day at work, right? This is one of the most prevalent ones for me. I was doing fine, right? I was still living in a trailer, right? But my day had went well, and I was driving on I-84 towards Riverdale to get off on the Riverdale exit. And somewhere between the time I left work and the exit, I had to pull over because the fear and anxiety in me was so overwhelming that I couldn't drive anymore. And I couldn't figure out what it was. I called Avery and I was like, I am fucking freaking out right now. And she goes, why? And I'm like, I don't know. I do not know why. Right? And it was so scary for me to be in that place. And I recognized, as Cameron was saying, right, I recognized that there was something wrong there. And so that gave me the fuel I needed to start the serious process of identifying the fears, right? And you're right, the fear of the unknown. But I was afraid to get sober and change my life because I didn't know what it would look like, right? But go back to what Nate was saying. There are some things that we can do. If you listen to enough successful people and read enough books and ask for enough help and talk to the people that you admire, we can recognize a pattern with them, right?
Right.
And all those things seem to have these certain things that are in common, right? One of them is recognizing that fear, the emotion, the chemical process in our bodies is going to be there. When Cameron started his journey at the beginning of this year, we talked a lot about resistance and fear and knowing that that's going to come up and we're going to have to move through it anyway. So when I started doing the work on fear, all I did was list them, right? The obvious stuff that I knew. I'm afraid of being broke. I'm afraid of being fat. I'm afraid of being sick. I'm afraid of dying. I'm afraid of like being homeless. I'm afraid of relapse. I'm afraid of not being loved, you know? And I listed them, like no particular order. Not one of them had more bearing than another one. But I was able to put them on paper and look at them in a list that I could identify, right? And go, okay, what is it about me being afraid of not being loved? And I could go back through my past and I could look at all these behaviors that I had that pushed people out of my life, right? And I could go back and I could identify that I was always loved, regardless of how hard I tried to stop you guys, right? How hard I tried to stop my parents, how hard I tried to stop my friends and lovers. Like, I, out of all that stuff, if I look at it for fact, right? What is the fact? I am loved. So whether I'm afraid of it or of not being loved or not, I am loved, right? So what are some things that I can incorporate to make me believe that, right? Well, how about I be honest with you, right? And we start doing the work in the progression towards the next way, the next level of our journey, which is working towards the person we want to be instead of running away from the person that we used to be. See, and with doing that work, we can identify our fears. We can take into consideration whether they are realistic, right? Having a fear of being broke, you should have a fear of being broke, right? Our society runs on money. Like, you don't get to live anywhere for free for most people. Like, most people are paying something for where they're at, you know? So, yeah, like, we need food. We use money for food. We need money, right?
Right.
So, yeah. So being afraid of not having it is probably a good idea. So what are some things that we can do to lose that fear? Like, decide what it is you love to do. What would you love to do? What's something proactive that you can do in that area, right? Because if we do what the successful people do, we can, in a way, predict the future, right? We know that if we get up every morning and go to the gym, regardless of how we feel, there's going to be some benefits. We can predict that you're going to start losing weight, right? If you go and you work out, if you start eating correct foods, right? Even though it's scary to stop the donuts, it's scary to stop the candy, it's scary to stop the pizza, right? Even though all that stuff is really scary, we know that if we change that behavior, regardless of how we feel, there's going to be results that come along with it. Cameron's proof of that. We can watch him in real time on camera, the progression that went from what he was in December to what he is now. And he did not feel like going to the gym every day. Did you, Cameron?
No, I mean, I don't feel like it now. Right. But like, does, you said, right? Like, regardless of how we feel, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And that was the same thing that kept our species evolving and growing and staying alive and becoming the dominant species on the planet, was regardless of how scared we were, we went out of the cave, we fought off the tigers, we trapped the gazelles. And ate them.
They're hard to catch, though.
They are hard to catch. There was probably some stuff that we ate, but I mean, does that make sense? Like, that's how I do it, yeah. And I try, because I still have fear, right? Being self-employed and taking on employees, you know, I still have that voice in the back of my head that says, "You're fucking irresponsible, man. You can't. You're not gonna fuck. Are you kidding me? Who the fuck are you trying to kid? This is who you are." And then I have to do that self-talk that goes, this is who I am, right? I am a business owner. I am a boss and a father and a goddamn good one. You know, we have to do those things. So anyway, what do you think?
Well, that was very well said. You know, I love how you put that. You know, one thing you talked about, you know, we got to be able to be alone to really figure out.
I have talked about that.
That's one of the hardest things for me, is being alone. Like, I don't like being alone with myself, you know? It's kind of scary to be in my own thoughts and
yeah,
you know? I don't know. I'm slowly getting over that, you know? But
you're doing that, and if I may, you're doing that through experimentation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. If I may, like Nate is trying different things.
He's trying
to be alone.
Yeah.
Sit with himself, and he goes, "Fuck, I don't like how this feels." Ugh.
I don't.
And then he goes and he bees with people, right? And if he, like for example, if he's with the same person all day long, He goes, fuck, I don't like being with people.
I'm never happy right? with what I have.
No. That's not what I'm saying. Like, but you recognize it. But then when you go and you spend this much time with people, like when you...
I see what you're saying. Right? Yeah, I see. You're absolutely right.
You're like, oh, I like this, but I like going home and having my me time at night.
Yeah, I do.
You know,
yeah.
So you're experimenting with that stuff. You're not tied into a relationship that you don't want to be in. Yeah. And you're not tied into being reclusive and staying by yourself all the time.
You're right.
Right. So you're experimenting with your life in that area, trying to figure out like what is, where do I resonate?
And hopefully not like tied into one specific belief about yourself over another, like I can't be alone or I don't like being around people. It's like, both those things are true in certain instances.
Well, you know,
you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to build my identity out of I don't like being alone.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Exactly.
And you're doing great.
I appreciate that. It's really hard for me. While we were doing my step work, I remember getting to step 10, and I did.
Which is?
Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him.
Boom. Continue to take personal inventory when we're wrong, promptly amended in step 10. But
That's 11, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I had it mixed. Sorry. Yes. Yeah, what is step 10?
Continue to take personal inventory.
Okay.
When we were wrong,
promptly admit it. So when we got to step 11, when Willie and I got to step 11, I remember my parents went out of town for 3 days. And I locked myself in their house for 3 days. Mm-hmm. And you were on a walkabout, too. You were doing your own.
Oh, yeah. That was last August when I did my walkabout.
Yeah. And I remember it was so uncomfortable. Like, I took a bunch of books and, I had, like, 4 legal pads to write shit down on, you know. And...
Did you go out and buy yourself a really nice pen?
I already had one. But I did buy some really nice legal pads.
Yeah.
But, it was really hard staying in the house and being alone. I kept thinking to myself, I need to get this done. I need to leave and go get this done. But then I had to remember what my purpose was. And hey, I'm going to do this and really give it my all. But I remember talking with you a few days after that. And some of the realizations that I came to were amazing. I would have never come to those realizations had I not done that and been alone and really worked on figuring out what's going on with me, you know. I'll just come out and say it. You know, I figured out I got a problem with entitlement. You know, I remember we talked about that. You know, and there were some other things that I learned about myself that I had to work on, you know, but it's hard for me to be alone sometimes, you know, I start, my head gets going, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. It really is. It's hard. Yeah. I don't know if you guys have that problem.
The biggest thing I heard in what you just said is that you did the work.
I did.
The work, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And like, despite how you felt, You did the work on yourself. I guess the point I'm trying to make is, like, it doesn't matter what the work is.
Right.
Like, it doesn't matter if it's 12-step work, if it's locking yourself in your house for 3 days.
That's what Mariah did.
Right, right? Yeah, like, exactly.
She did.
She's got such a unique story.
Yeah.
You know, but, like, it doesn't matter what the work is. Like, the act of working on yourself, like, I have some family members now that are, like, going to therapy after, you know, X amount of years, and it's like seeing the difference that comes from that person working on themselves is amazing. So it's like, I think taking the action to take and do the work, like Willie is saying, like, run towards your better self instead of away from who you are, you know, is really like the best combatant for fear.
Right. I would agree with that.
This thought just came to me too. I remember in those, like, it was like the second day, I remember it dawned on me I had this fear of being honest with myself.
Yeah.
And really, you know.
I think a lot of people could agree with that.
Yeah, I was scared to really admit my fault, my weaknesses, my, you know, I didn't want to admit things that I had done wrong. You know, I was still making excuses for things, and I wasn't able to really put that aside until I was honest with myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard. It was really hard. And it was kind of depressing too.
Sure.
At first it was, sure. You know, but yeah, I had to be honest with myself. I had to really get real raw, just raw with myself.
Vulnerable, would you say?
Vulnerable. Yep. And it's hard. It was hard for me. Really hard. You know, I couldn't do it with a therapist. I had a hard time doing it with therapists. Cause I like, why would I be scared about what a therapist thought?
Isn't it
like they haven't heard the same shit, you know? What does it matter?
You're just making me think about like how ridiculous it is. Like, you go to a therapist and you lie.
I would.
Like, I did too. Like, it's just the crazy and the craziness that is us, right?
Yeah.
Like, go to a therapist and totally lie about what's going on. With
oh
us.
Yeah, I totally would. Yeah. Just, how stupid.
We're gonna have a therapist on in a couple episodes, I think. And
I'm excited.
We could ask her about that. Like,
oh man.
Like, what does she know?
I gotta ask her.
Maybe we could put that out there and be like, "Hey, yeah, fuck. How many people lie to you?"
it seems so counterproductive, and
it really does.
It's so typical, right?
Yeah.
Because, like you said, like we're so dishonest with ourselves,
mm-hmm,
that even when we're in a situation where we think we're trying to help ourselves, we're still gonna lie.
Yeah.
That's how much we believe the lie, or we want to believe the lie anyways, is that, you know, we're going to make sure this person believes the lie too and get help according to the lie.
Oh, like, yeah.
It's,
ooh.
It's insane.
What a rabbit hole.
I could get lost down that.
Yeah, hole. Jesus. I identify, though.
Oh, me too.
You know, and it wasn't until I decided that my mission was to know me well, regardless of what I found. Right, and the beautiful thing is, and you guys could probably agree, the beautiful thing is that I found this person that is just full of love and help, and like I, you know, just really positive and just a better person than I ever thought was there. And I'm like, why did I wait so long? Why did I lie so much?
Yeah,
you know? But I was afraid. You know, we get so much, we get so wrapped up in the lie of who we're supposed to be, who we think we're supposed to be, who we think you think we're supposed to be, who we think you think we are, like who we think you think I'm supposed to be, who I think, you know.
Think.
Yeah, and I shared about, like, on this journey to find myself when I did my first walkabout, and I listed everybody, every single labeled name that I had for myself, whether it was self-imposed or someone else had given me, right? Like, I put all the identities that I had on a piece of paper, you know? Like boy, Willie, Will, William, son, brother, addict, alcoholic, American, male, like, you know?
Thief.
Yeah, thief, liar.
Stripper?
Yeah, like wire stripper.
That's on my list.
Head go somewhere else?
Right, but anyway, like I listed those out, and it was extensive. Once I started like putting on paper the labels that I had for me, it was no wonder I had no fucking identity, that my identity was confused and like I didn't have... know who I was, because I was so many things. There was no way that I could be all that. It was overwhelming. How could you, you know, not be in fear? And in the 12-step program that I really did most of my work, because I too had been to therapy,
right,
through treatment and aftercare, and as a kid, like family counseling and all that kind of shit. I fucking lied my ass off. I'm not going to tell anybody
shit. I'm not the only one, okay.
Because I didn't know anything, right?
Yeah.
I didn't know who the fuck. I could go and sit down with a therapist now and fucking throw everything out that I know for sure and be completely open to suggestions, right? But when I started this process and I was doing the steps, like what I identified, right? It says, It's in the sixth, the sixth and seventh step. It says we're entirely ready to have these defects of character removed. Well, it says have God remove these defects of character, yeah. but we're entirely ready to have these defects of character removed, whether it's by God or whatever the process is, right? We all right. know how I feel about right. that.
Yeah.
I was entirely ready to have my defect of character removed. Unfortunately, I found one defect in my character, one defect that I was born with, that I'm wired with, that there seems no way of getting rid of, and it's fear, right? I'm chemically evolved to depend on that, right? So I have fear. It's part of every bit of part of me is my arms are, right? You can take my arms away, and I'll still have fear. You can take my legs off, and I still have fear, right?
Right.
As long as my organs and my hormone glands are working, I'm going to have cortisol, I'm going to have adrenaline, I'm going to have these things that make me feel fear, right? So even though I'm ready to have that removed, right, what ends up happening is, like I said before, my shortcomings, which step seven talks about, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings, right? Humbly decided to work on my shortcomings, right? Because every negative behavior, which I consider a shortcoming, is based in that fear.
Right.
So when I identified that I have one thing wrong with me, right? Not all this other shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Not all my sexual thoughts and not my overeating and not, you know, when I break it down to the core of why I overeat, why I obsess about sex, why I get angry and yell, why I drive too fast in certain situations, right? Those are the shortcomings that are based in fear. Those are the behaviors that are based in that emotion. And when I can go, okay, that's the thing that's wrong with me. How do I work on it? And it's the stuff that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Working on fear becomes like living in fear, stepping through fear becomes manageable. Doesn't go away.
Right.
It becomes manageable.
Right, right.
Yeah, jump in. Jump right in.
One thing that helped me with processing fear and that was, in going back to the therapy, I was so scared of what the therapist and psychiatrist were thinking about me.
Sure, what if they told your wife?
And in my mind, I would sit there thinking, what they're writing down is this guy is fucked up. Like, we need to get him locked up, you know? Like, I had such a fear that I was so screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the 12 steps, we work with a sponsor. And I think for me it was important to work with someone else. You know,
sure.
When we sat down and we went over my fear inventory, we went over my resentments, I kind of spilt my guts to you. You know, I remember you could tell I was holding back mm-hmm. some things, and you started sharing some things about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me comfortable. Like, I felt so comfortable. Like, there isn't anything I can say that is going to change his opinion of me. Well, I don't know. But I just felt comfortable. you know what I mean? Like,
to trust somebody.
Yeah. And it was like, wow, I can really let it out, you know? And that was like freeing. It was liberating
for me. Yeah, very much.
And the reason why I bring this up is I'm big into mentors, you know?
Like, sure.
AA, we promote sponsors. You know, the 12-step program I work promotes a sponsor. And I think it's important that everybody has some sort of a mentor that they can talk to, a friend.
I agree.
Whether it's Absolutely. A therapist, sponsor, friend, mentor, whatever. That you can tell, you feel comfortable telling anything to.
I agree.
I can tell you guys anything. You know, I can call you up at any time and say, this is going on. You know, I've got this problem. You know, I'm feeling this way. Or I did this. I lied. I feel, and we can work through it.
Yeah.
You know what's funny is, like, I solidified my friendship with both of you this week with two separate things that nobody else knows about me. I told you one and
yes,
you the other.
Yes, you did. You did.
How about that?
Good for you.
So, like, it's just
I can't remember what it is, but.
Thank God. I remember.
I don't.
But, I mean, it goes back to what you're saying, right? Like, I have to have people in my life that I can tell anything to. And, like, I was comfortable sharing those things with you guys because I knew that there was no judgment that came from it.
Right.
Right? Like, it's just another thing. And, like, what you're talking about, like, you spilled your guts to Willie. I guarantee everything that you had that you had been holding on to for however many years because of the fear of how you were going to be judged for those things is not the worst thing Willie has ever heard.
Or done.
Or done. Yeah. So, like, taking comfort in that is such a lot of strength comes from that, just knowing that, you know, like, I can tell this person the worst thing that's ever done or happened to me and know that they probably heard worse.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, with all that, you know, I know that we've all kind of been through a process. I would love to hear other people's processes on how they do this stuff. And I've heard a little bit, but like, me and Nate worked together, but was it kind of the same for you, Cameron?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, I worked with a sponsor. You know, my sponsor was on the show. He was on episode.
Great guy.
Six or seven?
Seven.
Seven. Thanks, bud.
Yeah.
And yeah, I did the same thing. We wrote out our fears, and it was great because sometimes what I think I'm afraid of isn't what I'm afraid of at all.
Right.
You know? And so, like, going through those fears with another person really helped me identify, like, okay, like, what is it that I'm really afraid of? And it's not until I really know, like, what is the root fear that I'm dealing with,
right,
that I can then sort of address it and work with it or, you know, move past it.
Right.
So yeah.
Manage.
Yeah, the same process, you know, which was super helpful, and I'm very grateful that I have that process. But I'm like you, Willie. I would love to hear, like, what other people do to combat fear. Like, I think that we're probably going to find that it's a lot of the same as what we've been talking about, as far as, like, people just taking steps on a daily basis to better themselves.
Sure.
I think is probably the best combatant for fear. But I would love to know if there's any other processes or anything that anybody has.
I'm all about growth.
Oh, yeah. I love hearing
me
that
too.
Stuff.
You know, and on that respect, when I was talking about the week, how I had, like, kind of an off week, I kind of feel like that's, like, the biggest thing is that I didn't feel growth this week.
Oh.
Do you ever feel that?
Oh, yes, I do.
Where it's like, I didn't feel growth this week, and thus I'm afraid that I'm reverting. And not progressing.
Right. And like, if we break that down, I would dare say, like, Cameron is afraid of reverting because Cameron is afraid of gaining weight, because Cameron is afraid of being in that dark space, because Cameron is afraid of, right, whatever the root, believing he's not loved. Or whatever.
You
not
are loved.
Worthy or,
right,
you know, not accepted or rejected.
Right.
Or, yeah, so maybe that's a good real-world problem we can just work in real time. You know?
Yeah.
Right?
So yeah.
It's a good example.
Sure, yeah. Sure, you know.
Yeah, I too would love to hear from other people and what they do. I know there's, you know, other things than what we do, so, and I'd love to hear it too. So, yeah, it'd be great.
I would too, you know, and speaking of fear, I mean, why don't you introduce...
Yes, our war story for this episode.
This girl had some fucking crazy fear.
Crazy fear.
In her life.
Yeah, Lindsay.
Yeah,
our friend Lindsay. Man, it's a great story.
Wonderful,
great story.
Wonderful lady.
Yeah, Lindsay's one of the nicest people I know. Really,
she's great.
She is. She is.
Big hugger.
Big hugger. I love her hugs. Yeah.
The first time I met her, she hugged me and, like, she had listened to the podcast before I knew who she was. And so she told me she really liked the podcast and
she's a big fan.
Yeah.
She's
great. I still, whenever I see her in meetings, I make it a point to say hi to Lindsay because
yeah,
she's pretty great. But yeah, like I really enjoyed hearing her story.
It was like, heavy, man.
Yeah. I mean, she talks about losing a child in her story.
And more than that, having to make a decision to keep her son alive on life support for the duration of his life, or, oh, fuck, it gives me chills, man.
Yeah.
Lindsay, yeah. I can't imagine, like, I know you touch on it, but I can't imagine what that would have been like, you know? Like, if there's ever a justifiable excuse to, like, that would seem mm-hmm. like it, right? Like, but
right.
it's not like she decided that she was going to get sober despite that, you know, and change yeah. her life and change her opinion about herself, because that's what we're finding, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's been the greatest thing, I think, with her especially, is to overcome what she did. Like, she, as well as so many that we've heard, you know, was always trying to find a place where she felt like she fit in.
Mm-hmm.
She finally yeah. felt like she had some acceptance with, like, the wrong crowd, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that took her to a very dark place. And, you know, now she's to the point where she has so much energy, and she just really seems mm-hmm. like she loves herself, and like she's got a lot of self work, and she gets that through the work that she does with others and the service that she does and you know, the things that she's accomplished. One of the things I really liked about her and her story is that she mentioned, you know, being very grateful that she was in a position where she could pay her bills.
Right.
Right.
And I think that that's, you know, like, people don't think about the fact that, like, not everybody does that.
Yeah.
And that, you know, like, when we do things like that, like some trivial thing that, you know, nobody, quote unquote, likes to do, like, it really, it can build us up and make us feel so much better about ourselves when we get to do things like be responsible, like do the right thing. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact yeah. that she, you yeah. know, expressed gratitude for that, I loved hearing
yeah.
that.
Yeah. I love how she says, suit up and show up.
Yeah.
She suits up and shows up.
Yeah.
I love
regardless
that.
Of how scared she is.
Yep.
You know, and I could identify with her meth use, you know, like I found meth early on, fell in love with it, quit it for quite a while, and ended with it, you know, like, and her talking about that moment of clarity where, you know, she moved out of town, came back. The relationship fell apart, and found herself in a closet, in a fucking closet, yeah. spun out
for days, for a couple days,
yeah. and having that moment of clarity of like, this ain't right,
right?
Yeah, right.
This ain't right.
This is not normal.
Yeah, and just. Being spun out and then like getting the help that she needed in order to get into, you know, the facility that she was able to finally get sober in and now is a big part of and helps other women get sober that have come through the same kind of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really admirable and
yeah,
I really appreciate her sharing.
Yeah, I really appreciate her being willing to share it with you know, with everyone.
Yeah.
So without further ado, let's hear Lindsay's war story.
I'm Lindsay, and I am a grateful recovered addict. So I'm just going to start with earliest. So when I was little, I grew up in a lot of addiction. There's a lot of addiction in my family, and I can just remember whatever was wrong, there was medicine for it. So growing up, there was a lot of chaos, a lot of dysfunction, and I can remember just wanting to be loved and accepted and good enough. And so even before I started using, I seeked attention, whether it be good or bad. And so that's the earliest thing I can remember. So then in high school, well, junior high and high school, so seeking that acceptance and love, I wanted to fit in, and I would become whatever I thought others wanted me to be accepted. And so in junior high, I was accepted into the, like, misfit group, you know, so those experimenting with drugs, and different things. And so that's, from there, I started smoking pot. And then I had a hard time focusing in school and getting my work done and just being able to focus. And so after doing pot and drinking, and there was like some other stuff in there, I came across meth. And from the first time I did it, I loved it because it helped me to focus. And I could get all my work done, and I had all this energy, and I didn't have to sleep. So became a pretty much everyday tweaker when I was a teenager. And then, so there was a lot that happened as a teenager. Getting into trouble and sneaking out and just pretty much doing whatever I wanted, no matter what the consequences were. And then I met a man. So that went on until I was like 18, and I met a man, and he didn't like tweakers. And so he became my drug. Because then again, I wanted to be loved and accepted and to be enough. And so I quit tweaking, but I still smoked pot and drank. And we were together for 10 years. And when I was 19, I had my daughter, Chloe, at 1 pound, 13 ounces. She was 3.5 months early. And I can just remember, like, just being so full of fear, not knowing what was going to happen, if I was really equipped enough to be her mother. So I felt inadequate. And there was just a lot of things she needed, like, I pretty much became a nurse, but not certified, like learning about the pulse ox machine and deep suctioning and treatments. And so there was just a lot to do for Chloe, and I just didn't feel enough. So she was in and out of the hospital a lot, and we ended up moving to Arizona because we needed some financial help, and my husband's mom lived there. And so I moved away from my family and all my support. And I can remember just feeling so overwhelmed with Chloe and all the challenges she had, and not feeling like I was enough, and then no support, none of my family there. So I felt really alone. So I'm in Arizona, all alone, full-time mom. My husband was working a lot, and I think he was just scared too. So it was easier for him to work than to face the challenges with Chloe. And so I started seeing doctors for my back pain and getting prescribed pain pills. And as I got more pain pills, the pain increased, you know, so I started getting higher doses and going through procedures that I probably didn't even need just to get more pain pills. So that went on the whole time I was in Arizona. And also in Arizona, my daughter got a rare pneumonia and only had 30% chance to live. And that was really scary. And I think that was like the peak of the pills, because I got 120 Vicodins, and then I also would go to Jared's grandma to get more pain pills, so I don't even really know how much I was taking. But so then after that, we moved back to Utah, and that was in 2008. And Chloe's health got better. She still struggled in school a lot, and you could still see that there was something off. Like, she just wasn't understanding or developing like other, you know, kids her age. So there was still a lot of therapy and stuff going on. And then I got pregnant, like, I think 2010, 2011, and Elijah was born July 16th of either 2011 or 2012, and he was 4 months early, 1 pound, 11 ounces, and when the doctors looked to see if he was eligible for surgery, they decided he wasn't, because he had category 4 brain bleeds, and less than 25% of his brain was left. Less than 25%. And so they told us that we had to decide whether to keep him on the respirator on machines for the rest of his life, or to take him off the respirator. And after some time, well, that was a really hard decision to make, and not a whole lot I remember with that, because I think I pretty much just smoked pot and just took pills, like, whatever, to not think about it. So on August 29th, we decided to take him off the respirator, and he lasted an hour. And then at the funeral, I decided to dress him, which was probably not the best decision, because I carried that mental image in my mind from then on. And so pretty much the day that I came home from his funeral, that was my jumping off point. I was off and running, drinking every day as much as I could to black out, taking different pills, whatever I could. It wasn't until I ran into some friends that I used to use with when I was a teenager, and they pulled out some meth, and that was my drug of choice, and I started doing that again. And the progression was pretty fast. After me starting to do it, my husband found out and he started to do it, and pretty much just created our own hell. A lot of violence between each other, talking down to each other, accusations, like, just complete hell. So that went on with my daughter in the midst of it. And a couple weeks before deciding to leave, I had my mom come pick up my daughter, because I just knew that it wasn't a safe place. And then when I finally made the decision to leave and move in with my mom, that was just like a whole new like even more of a level of jumping off, because that's when I started using the needle and locking myself in the closet for days. And so there's not a whole lot I remember about those times. I pretty much stayed high and up until I just completely collapsed to sleep. I was scared to go to sleep because of nightmares of seeing that image of my son, and just other things that since my son had passed away, just all the destruction and insanity that had happened in my life. So I stayed high, and I can remember just this one time. It's like another mental image that I have, and I'd been in the closet for a couple days, and just trying to continue to get high. And I remember just looking down and just blood dripping all parts of my body. And it was just like that moment that I was just like, oh my gosh, this is not normal. This is not okay. And that kind of just was like the beginning of, like the start of how I made it to treatment. So after that, the Women's Retreat House name came up, and I started calling. And I can just remember the other voice on the end, which is, she's now my best friend in sobriety now. But I just could be totally honest with her and tell her, you know, whatever was going on. I was just totally honest. And after 2 weeks of calling her, she called me and told me there was a bed available and that I'd be 3 days clean and sober. And I was like, 3 days? I can't even go 10 minutes without getting high. And so she communicated with my mom, and they came up with a plan to bring me back to my mom's and give me something to help me sleep. And I slept for 3 days, and that's how I got enough sober time to make it to the retreat house. Walking into the retreat house, I was so scared and like so much fear, but like I felt at home. And I'm grateful for that gift of desperation, because I really think that's what I needed to fully grasp and just be willing and surrender to just soak up everything about the program and to take suggestions and get in the middle of the herd. So I spent 90 days there and transitioned out. And so many things that I learned there that I use in my recovery today. Just like keep it simple. About how you present yourself. You know, we're ladies. Stuff like that. Responsibility, being accountable, suiting up and showing up. And after leaving the retreat house, after 30 days, I went back and managed. And from there, once I got my 18 months, I was able to serve on the board at the Women's Retreat House and become vice president and president. And through that, there's so much growth that happened too. Just that another level of like surrender and not exerting my will, being willing to hear suggestions and communicate. Just a lot that I learned. And then also just, you know, being just in the center of the herd and meeting all the ladies that come through the retreat house. And so then after the board, there's so many gifts of sobriety. Just like where my journey has led me, like I worked at a mortuary and got to hold space for people that just lost a loved one, and just to be supportive and give free hugs, and, you know, that was an amazing gift. And paying off my past debt. I even owed money when I left the retreat house and paid that. Became a Reiki master. That's another gift. And there's so many internal gifts, like just really getting to know myself and finding out who I really am, and not having to be who others want me to be, but really just be the authentic me, and embracing the dark and the light in life, in myself. I also get to work at Weaver Human Services, and I get to help people every day, all different types of help, whether it be just being kind to somebody or helping them to fill out paperwork, recovery, learn new skills, or fine-tune the skills they have. Like, there's just so many different aspects that I get to help people today. And with my daughter too, I also get to walk through some of the challenges she has. When she was 12, she was diagnosed with autism, and so she has her own struggles with you know, just school, being in junior high, and if you're a little weird, people, you know, make fun of you or whatever. So just like being an example of how recovery works in my life, I get to pass that on to my daughter to help her in her life. And through recovery too, I think that I've gotten a lot more patience, like to just pause and breathe and use my tools to not freak out and get overwhelmed with some of the challenges that day-to-day life brings. And I know today that I am loved, and I am enough, and I'm worth so many things. And that, I think, is so huge for me, because that's what I was searching for my whole life. And even in the biggest of challenges, I still can find joy and something to be grateful for, and the light, if you will, in those opportunities for growth. And that's what I call them, instead of bad or darkness or struggles, you know, they're opportunities for growth, because today it's just a journey, and it's up to me what I make of it. Thank you for giving me this opportunity, and I love you all.
All right. That was great. I love that story.
Oh, man.
I love it, too. Yeah. It's, yeah.
She talks about that just as part of her story, yeah. You know, and you know, I think that her working at the mortuary was surprisingly therapeutic for her, you know.
Yeah, that is surprising. That's one part of her story that I identify with. It's very sort of dark, is that, you know, she talked about how she was haunted by the memory of having to dress her child,
yeah,
for a funeral. And it's like, I too experienced a really, really heavy loss, and I was part of that process as well. And that memory definitely sticks with me. And so, I mean, it's just great to have people around that, you know, will tell bits and pieces of my story that I can identify with.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. And, you know, there's two things when I'm around Lindsay, there's two things other than her kindness, just being one of the kindest person.
You can feel it.
Yeah, she has this a lot of kindness. She's a very kind person. She's brave. She's very brave.
Very brave.
And I admire her for that. And thank you for sharing your story, Lindsay. We really appreciate
it. Thank you so
much. We love you.
We love you. We do.
Everybody loves
you. The other side of hell loves you. And hey, before we leave, we sign off, I want to kind of get our viewers involved a little bit.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Viewer engagement.
Viewer engagement. I'm going to initiate a challenge to our viewers. I'm sure everyone who watches the show knows that I'm really big on gratitude lists. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a gratitude guy.
I read one each day, and so does Willie.
Mm-hmm. Right on. And so I'm going to issue a challenge to everyone who watches the show. Three things you're grateful for at night. Write it down for the week. Do it for 7 days. And we'd love to hear from you and the experience you get.
Write to us. Tell us what you're grateful for.
Yeah, like, tell us. Yeah, we want to hear from you.
I wouldn't mind that hearing that.
So, no, I mean, why not? You can send it in an email if you'd like to theothersideofhell@gmail.com. Or if you want to post something on Instagram, just make sure you hashtag the other side of hell, because we want to hear from you. We want to know how the challenge is going, because, you know, we want you to be engaged. This is your podcast, too.
Exactly.
Very, very well.
And remember, it cannot be the same thing every day. It's got three different things every day. Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, can't be your family, your wife, and your car. You know, it's got to be, let's mix it up a little bit.
But that can be one day.
That can be one day. Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, good. I got tomorrow taken
care of. Yeah, I was going to say,
I want to make sure that everybody knows the rules.
Your first day for you.
You know? So, all right. Well, this was a great episode, guys. I really enjoyed this. And I'm I'm walking away a better person.
It's a good reminder to just tell everybody, you know, wash your hands. Don't freak out. Like, we will get through this together. That's
fine. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
We're all in the same boat.
That's right.
That's right. Okay. Well, hey, I want to thank everybody for tuning in. I want to thank you guys for another great show.
You're welcome.
And all right. Good night, guys.
See you on the other side.
You're worth the work.
Hey, gang. A way you could help us support the show is by liking and subscribing if you're watching on YouTube, or giving us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Thanks, guys. There's no fans quite like you.